welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace.
And I'm Manny.
And this episode is a comic catch-up episode. We're going to be talking about what we have on tap for some upcoming episodes. We're going to talk a little bit about some recent reads. And we're also going to announce our categories for the Comic Source End of Year Awards, as well as give a little news about one of our favorite properties, Con Man. So, the first thing I want to talk about, first thing we have coming up later this week, is the return of the Top Cow Chronology, which is how this whole madness started. We got away from it for a while, but it's going to be returning. We've had some people asking about it, and basically it came down to we didn't just want to put out one episode of the Top Cow Chronology, and then a few weeks later, maybe another one, or, you know, a month goes by, another one. We wanted to get quite a few done and recorded, and so we can keep them coming out on a regular basis, because I still have a huge desire to read the Top Cow interconnected artifact universe. You know, I still want to read Witchblade. I still want to read Darkness. I still want to read Magdalena. And there's been rumblings and rumors that 2017 is going to see the return of a lot of those artifact properties from Top Cow. Magdalena, the Darkness specifically. So we're definitely going to be getting back to doing a Top Cow Chronology episode. So for those of you that have been asking, it's coming. Look for some of those later this week. Also, another new project we have coming up that I'm very excited about is we're going to be starting a Marvel Chronology series of podcasts. And I went back and forth on what to do as the start. Manny has not read a lot of Marvel, and so for that reason I thought about, well, should we do classic stuff? You know, we could do like the first 100 issues of Spider-Man or Iron Man, we could do some Hulk, we do Captain America, like Avengers maybe. And then I thought, you know what? There's a really good chronology on a website I'll tell you about in a second, and it's a Secret Wars chronology, and it's the entire Secret Wars story. So it starts way back in the mid-80s, kind of the second ever giant miniseries that Marvel decided to do, kind of after they saw what DC was doing with Crisis on Infinite Earths. They did that first series, 12-issue Secret Wars. A lot of it was to sell the Secret Wars toys that Marvel had come out with, and it was classic stuff, and then it was so popular they came out with Secret Wars 2 that honestly wasn't very good. But then that eventually led to all of Jonathan Hickman's work, all his Marvel work for a good period, 4 or 5 years, that eventually led up to the Secret Wars 2 miniseries that was plagued by delays and finally finished up in January of this year. So it spans almost 30 years of Marvel history. So I thought, what better way to introduce Manny to the Marvel side of things from a comic book perspective? And really, it's some classic stuff. It'll also help me get more familiar with a lot of the more modern Marvel stuff, because basically after the first Civil War, I kind of stopped reading Marvel. That was kind of when I got out. I was like, ah, this is enough. You know, I dabbled here and there, picked up a few titles here at Moon Knight, Hulk, some Iron Man here or there, but especially when the Avengers hit and it exploded with the Marvel Cinematic Universe and all the characters then, you know, transforming themselves into their movie counterparts, even though all along Marvel's saying, no, we don't care what they're doing in the movies. It's two totally different universes. It's two totally different universes. Well, then how come all your characters are starting to look like the characters in the movies? It's wearing the same costumes. And, you know, then you had the removal of the Fantastic Four because Marvel didn't have the rights to the cinematic version of them. Then you saw the de-emphasis on the X-Men because Marvel didn't have the cinematic, and it didn't sit well with me, and it still doesn't, that Marvel chooses not to focus on some of their best properties, some of the most important properties, because they're not making money off them on the movie side of things, you know, and the fact that Disney owns them now and it's a big corporation, it's just it's a headache. So for that reason, big part of the reason I haven't been reading much Marvel, plus it just, the comics don't seem to be very good these days, the stuff that I have read. It's hard enough to follow when they're rebooting every other week. You have 7 volumes of Captain America and 12 volumes of the Avengers. It just can't keep track anymore. So I thought, you know what? Let's do Secret Wars. Go back. I'll read that. Loved it as a kid when I read it. Read this chronology that I found on this website. It'll bring me up to present day. Maybe I'll rekindle my love for all things Marvel. So as I mentioned, I found this chronology on a website. The website is comicbookherald.com. That's comicbookherald.com. There's a link in the show notes for the complete Marvel Reading Order Guide, Secret Wars Reading Order. And the Comic Book Herald has the complete Marvel Reading Order. That's how he started the website. So you've got a Secret Wars Reading Order, you've got Deadpool Reading Order, you've got Civil War, you've got Age of Apocalypse, you've got Marvel Cosmic, you've got Avengers, and so many more. The guy that runs the site is named Dave. He has put a lot of work into the site. If you're a comic reader, you like the big two, I definitely recommend going and checking it out. There's just so much information there. He's got Buffy the Vampire Slayer comic book reading order. He's got Astro City reading order, Hellboy, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Transformers, Luke Cage, Ghost Rider, Iron Fist, Batman, DC New 52. I mean, the guy's put a ton of work. Marvel Unlimited reading order, Star Wars. I mean, there's just so much there. I highly recommend it. If you're one of those people, you want to get into comics, you're not sure where to start, or you want to, you know, maybe you're a Marvel reader and you want to get into DC, maybe you're DC and you want to get into Marvel, you don't know where to start, this is the perfect way to do it. Go pick a character, whichever character tickles your fancy, whatever stories you want to read. And, you know, a lot of us that read comics, you know, we want to start at the beginning. So it's a really good way. He breaks it down into getting very specific if you want to read every possible comic that kind of relates. But he also has Fast Track, where it's kind of the main. Okay, if you want just the main Secret Wars story, this is what you need to read. If you want the whole entire story, here's what you need to read. Here's the individual issues, or you can do it by trade, by getting these trades. So a lot of good information there. I want to be sure to give him credit for creating that Secret Wars reading order that we're going to be using. And as I said, there's a link in the show notes. I've reached out to Dave. I had reached out to him before to see about having him come on the show, and I never heard back. But hopefully I'll hear from him now. Hopefully he'll come and join us on some of these Secret Wars chronology episodes. It'd be really great to get his take, being that he's such a big Marvel guy these days. So there's a lot to it. It's a lot of issues. We're going to try to keep on at least a semi-regular basis. Hopefully once a week we'll put out one of the Secret Wars episodes. And really looking forward to it. I think Manny's really going to enjoy it. Let's see. What else do we have coming up in the near future? Oh, we have a Doctor Strange movie review. A lot of you have been asking about that. I haven't actually seen it yet, but I'm planning on going to see it very soon. I had planned on seeing it a couple times, and the weekend it came out, I was going to wait and go see it that following Tuesday, and then I ended up having to work. And then the following Tuesday, I was supposed to go see it with some friends. They bailed out. I didn't want to go by myself. So, and then after that, it kind of slipped my mind. So I'm definitely going to get out there, see that. Jaden has seen it already, and he'll come on the show to talk about that. Another big movie that's coming out. I don't know if you've heard of this one, Manny. Rogue One. A Star Wars tale. So this one has me intrigued. I have some friends who are intrigued as well. They were asking me the other day what my thoughts were. Did I think it was going to be any good? If they're not huge Star Wars fans, will they like it? And you know this is a first for Lucasfilm, which is now of course a division of Disney. There are so many people behind the scenes that this is their first Star Wars experience. Episode 4, 5, and 6, you know, the original trilogy, and then 1, 2, and 3, George Lucas was at the helm. You know, he was kind of the guiding force, kind of the visionary. John Williams did the scores for all of them, did the music. All of them had a screen crawl. There are just certain things that they all had, even to some extent. Episode 7 had, you know, the screen crawl, had a lot of the same people working behind the scenes and the same sensibility. And so this is really the first time that a lot of the people involved, 99% of the people involved, have never done a Star Wars movie before. So how's it going to be received by these hardcore Star Wars fans who have come to expect certain things from their movies. So, you know, I was telling a lot of my friends, if there was ever a chance for a Star Wars movie to not be good, like, if this is the biggest risk for it not to be very good. And the fact that it's not a part of the actual main Star Wars story, you know, it's called Rogue One, A Star Wars Tale. You know, it's a Star Wars anthology. It's related. It's in the same universe. Disney wants to start putting out a lot of these stories that are set in the same universe, but, you know, totally different. We've seen it done with comics. We've seen it done with novels. We've seen it done with cartoons. But we haven't seen it on the big screen yet. So, and you know, I've been telling people, if it's a good movie, people are going to go see it. That's the bottom line. So I guess it's a wait and see, but there's certainly a lot of anticipation. It's less than 2 weeks away now. So, are you pretty excited to go see it, Manny?
Not as much as you might think. A lot of people have asked me that, hey, you excited about Rogue One, this and that, whatever. And I'm like, it's okay. Oh, I'm gonna go see it, but not like, you know, Episode 7 excitement or DC property excitement. Just
and why is that? You know, why aren't you as excited as say to go see Episode 7?
You know, I don't know. Maybe it's gonna be just the fact that it's an entirely new property, and the fact that I kind of understand that this is in between movies, so there's only a certain amount of things that can happen. Not a lot of, you know, insane cliffhangers or, you know, surprise moments that you can get from an original movie. Same reason why I had an issue with the Star Wars comics, Darth Vader,
yeah, I was gonna say,
et cetera, et cetera. Because you know what happens next, so it really limits what they can do.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the characters have to be left at a certain point because you know. But in this, you know, there's not going to be, I don't think there's going to be a lot of characters that we've seen before. Certainly not the main characters. So in that way, they're going to have a little more freedom. I think for me, a reason to be less excited is the fact, okay, how long had it been since Episode 3, right? Revenge of the Sith. I mean, it's been a long time since that came out until we had Episode 7. Now, when you look at this one, it's like, okay, well, Episode 7 was just last year, and now we're getting, you know, Rogue One. And I think that is, you know, Disney does start wanting to put out, you know, one new Star Wars movie a year, if not more. And I, you know, you worry if you're going to see some diminishing returns. I think I may even have talked about that when we talked about A Force Awakens on the podcast long ago, nearly a year ago now. So you just wonder, you know, if the level of excitement is less because it hasn't been that long. It's only been a year, you know, so, eh. Also upcoming, I'm going to be doing a Dreaming Eagles spotlight episode with one of the comic Geek Speak podcasters. Chris Eberle is going to join me. He's a big fan of Garth Ennis, especially when Ennis is writing war stories. And Dreaming Eagles is a limited series that was put out by Aftershock, written by Garth Ennis. And it deals with the Tuskegee Airmen. For those of you that are not familiar, those are the African-American pilots of World War II who not only had to fight Nazis, but had to fight racism and segregation in the U.S. Armed Forces. And it's a really well done book, and I can't wait to talk about it. And then finally, I want to mention that it's not upcoming episode for us here at the Comic Source, but Manny and I are doing another exclusive podcast for LRM Online, which is the 9-panel grid. And that's a podcast that's under that nine-panel grid that's under the LRM umbrella. LRM Online, formerly Latino Review. They cover a lot of pop culture news, both TV and movie, and they want to start covering the comic side of things, where a lot of the roots of a lot of these properties, a lot of these TV shows, a lot of these movies are. They have their roots in comics. And so Manny and I have joined the team to kind of add to that. With that being said, a lot of people that go to the site maybe aren't as familiar with comics. Maybe they've come to the site through watching the CWDC shows or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. over at ABC or the Marvel Cinematic Universe or Batman vs. Superman or whatever their particular thing that brought them to LRM was, oftentimes it's probably not comics. So for that reason, the 9-panel grid is not quite as in-depth as the comic source is. It's a little broader. It's a little more for the beginning comic reader. So if you're a person who listens to this podcast, but at some times is like, well, who's Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor? Who's Gentleman Ghost? What Star Wars comics should I be reading? This is all kind of going over my head a little bit. I definitely recommend going over listening to 9-Panel Grid because it is a little more for the beginning or novice comic reader. And I think if you are a longtime listener of the show and you are very much into comics, there's still going to be a lot for you to get from our episodes over there. So those episodes come out every Tuesday. While you're there at LRM Online, be sure to check out a lot of their other news. They have other podcasts dealing with movies and TV shows, and they're all excellent, a source of good information and a whole lot of fun. So next thing we're going to talk about is some recent reads. So I'll turn it over to Manny. You had a couple of books you read recently that you wanted to talk about.
Okay. I will start with my most recent read. This was released this week by Marvel under their Marvel Now umbrella. It's Robbie Reyes' Ghost Rider. And this one is written by Felipe Smith, artwork by Danilo Beirut, colors by Val Staples and Jesus Arbertov. And then also there's a bonus story in it. Felipe Smith, Trad Moore on artwork, and Van Staples on colors. Pretty much, it's going to take us right back to the beginning. He already has the demon car, and he's already Ghost Rider. But it starts off once again with Robbie Reyes and Gabe, his little brother, who's in a wheelchair. And let me first talk a little bit about the artwork, which is for the most part fantastic. I thought that a lot of the panels are done really well. Facial expressions are done well. It's a little bit simpler in some ways, but in most cases I feel like it suits the book well. The only place where I really dislike the art is in the details of the muscle car. They're in some of the pages where it kind of almost looks like a sedan. It doesn't have that big muscle car feel. And I think that's really what it lacks. But the colors, though, overall are really, really good, especially in the pages where he turns into the Ghost Rider. And in one case, he's saving a family from being, looks like kidnapped or even sold. So in that aspect, again, the book was really, really good. My biggest problem with this book is, did you get a chance to read it?
No, I haven't had a chance. I glanced through it real quick. You know, I just have a hard time. I'm such a big Ghost Rider fan growing up, and I love Johnny Blaze. And to me, Ghost Rider's got to be on a motorcycle. I was kind of starting to come around on, seeing him in a muscle car. But I agree with you. The art is pretty good, except the car looks like whoever they got to draw, they can't draw cars.
They can't draw muscle cars, and that's one of, I think, the most important aspects of the book.
Yeah,
it needs to be really strong, really a muscle car, a little bit more like a squarish shape, classic feel. But what I'm getting at is the amount of totally awesome Hulk Amadeus Cho that we get in the book. That was ridiculous. Way too much. And you know how much I hate that character.
True.
So the fact that I got a couple of pages of Ghost Rider, of Robbie Reyes, and then I get so much of Amadeus Cho really rubbed me the wrong way, almost to the point where I'm like, you know what, I'm not even going to pick this up anymore. It looks like it's going to continue that way, where they're going to work together or something. But it just seems like two entities that, I, in my opinion, shouldn't be even in the same category with how strong and how serious of a character Robbie Reyes' character should be, and then how laid back and stupid Amadeus Cho's character is. the addition of the new Hulk. I mean, not Hulk. I'm sorry, Wolverine. I thought that would play well together. That would be Laura Kinney. I thought that was going to be interesting going forward. But I mean, I just don't want to see this Hulk in anything. So it really really put me off a little bit. But of course, I'm going to give the book a chance because it's like I said before, it's another Hispanic hero, anti-hero, whatever you want to think of him as. And I really like the way that his little brother and then his uncle's demon are kind of the ones that are keeping Robbie in balance. So he's not totally one way and he's not totally the other, because he has both entities to kind of level him off. So going forward, I look to see how his character develops, but I don't want to see any more of the Hulk. The backstory was okay. I just found it really weird how there was some chick in a skateboard who could somehow manipulate time that was able to outrun the demon muscle car. That was kind of weird. But and also she was the artwork in the back is strange to say the least. But definitely going to be giving the books another look, just because I want to support Robbie Reyes's character. I know a lot of people have Johnny Blaze as their favorite ghostwriter, and I understand, but this is something that I want to see, and I know that there's some readers out there that'd be very interested to see in this character grow a little bit more, especially with it being on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and things like that. Although I also think that maybe that character is being handled wrong in that aspect too, but that's a different story. The one cool thing I will say about this book is all the covers are amazing. The regular cover I thought was done really well, and that one was by, let me look that up really quick. Marco Scheschetto. That was done really well, and there's some variants also that look fantastic. Not to mention some of the covers that are coming up that have been released. So, I'd say give it a chance, but god damn it, get rid of that Hulk character. That to me is a huge negative in this book. So that's all I got to say about Ghost Rider. And then something else I've been reading from Marvel. It's kind of weird because I regularly don't read this with Marvel, but there's some interesting titles that have been coming out. Civil War 2 issue 7 came out, which art-wise, it looks great. I really like the way that David Marquez draws the characters, and then the colors are done really, really well. Kind of that dark Civil War feel. That's really not the issue in the book. The issue is that Brian Michael Bendis in issue number 7 really doesn't do much. They see the vision of Spider-Man, Miles Morales, killing Captain America. They go off, and then they end up in the same place, face off. Nothing happens in the issue. It's a waste of time, which I find that a lot of these issues in Civil War 2 have been a waste of time. I think one of the highlights was the trial of Hawkeye. That was one of that's probably my favorite issue in the run so far. But overall, Civil War 2, huge disappointment, and I think it falls under a different umbrella. Maybe something that you shouldn't have called Civil War, because Civil War pitted friends against friends, and you know, one ideology of Tony Stark versus another one of Captain America, and it severed ties, and it changed the Marvel universe forever. In this case, I feel that Captain Marvel is wrong, just dead wrong, and most of the heroes happen to be on her side, because obviously they can reason with that. And so I just think this is a failed attempt at just kind of capitalizing on the name and also the fact that the movie came out earlier in the year, and just a complete waste of time. And also it doesn't help that the book was delayed to the point where we kind of know what's happened, what already happens at the end, and we know where like Captain America goes after this, what happens to him, and then also Tony Stark, and then the new person who kind of takes over the mantle, supposedly, of Iron Man and things like that. Like I said, huge disappointment. And that is we'll see how this all wraps up in issue 8, which was never supposed to happen anyway.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, again, Marvel's just shooting themselves in the foot by having this book be so late. I mean, I totally agree with you that a lot of what they were doing was trying to capitalize on the Civil War movie, and by delaying and coming out so long after the movie, it's like any boost you would have gotten to the movie over to the comic, or the comic to the movie, you know, you wasted it by having it come out so late. And you know, we talked about it at the time when it was first announced, what their initial idea was. We talked about the fact that it was a much more complex issue than the first Civil War. And yet, the way they've had the story unfold, they've made it much less of a complex issue. And yeah, it's just easy to see that Captain Marvel's just wrong. And why would anybody be on our side? You know, just like they did the first time with Tony Stark. You know, that side is just wrong. And you ended up with good guys and bad guys rather than keeping it more in the gray area. So, yeah, I mean, can this book just end already? Can we just move on with our lives? Because, like, as you said, they already started the Marvel Now again, or what, you know, whatever they're calling it. Like, first of all, can't you name your initiative something different? Like, you've run out of initiative names that you're recycling them. We already had Marvel Now. Now you've got Marvel Now Divided, or whatever the heck they're calling it. It's ridiculous. That's already started. The cat's already out of the bag. We already know Tony Stark doesn't, you know, he's removed from the Marvel Universe. It needs to end. And I'll just leave it at that. As far as Ghost Rider goes, yeah, I didn't get a chance to read it. As I said, I did flip through it. I am also not a fan of Amadeus Cho as the Hulk. I was looking forward to Greg Pak returning to the Hulk. Even, you know, thinking I'd get some Bruce Banner. Obviously, he's dead, so much for that. It's dropped the title. Don't care for the character. It just doesn't work for me. But just when I was flipping through Ghost Rider, Trad Moore was like the original guy. Like when they came out with this Robbie Reyes character, like I said, it bugged me that it was a car. But, you know, it was Felipe Smith. It was Trad Moore. Didn't necessarily care much for the look of the book, the way the character looks, this Robbie Reyes Ghost Rider. But the car always looked cool. That's one thing that Trad Moore could do. He could draw the car really, really well. And like I had said, in the first story in this book, one thing I noticed right away, like almost from, I think it was even on the first page, that the car just looked not right. It doesn't look like the car is supposed to look like from everything we've seen before. It just doesn't look right. And so what you've done by having Trad Moore draw the backup book is you've made the car in the first story look even worse, because, you know, people read through and they see how bad the car looks in the first story, and they get to the bonus story and they're like, wow, this is what the car is supposed to look like. Wow, it looks kind of cool. So you've kind of shot yourself in the foot by making it look even worse. Like particularly the double page spread when the car is in the air, it just looks awesome with the, you know, flaming tires and the flames coming out of the blower and everything. It looks cool. It's the only thing I like about the new Ghost Rider is how cool the car looks. It shouldn't be a car. Ghost Rider should be on a motorcycle, but at least the car looks cool when Trad Moore draws it. So that's all I'll say about that. As far as things I've been reading lately, haven't had a lot of time to read. I've been keeping up on the DC Rebirth stuff, which of course we talked about in the last episode. Other than that, the books I've been trying to keep up on are the Aftershock books. Still a lot of good Valiant stuff coming out, a lot of good independent stuff. I'm just a little behind on that. Valiant, I'm woefully behind. I'm about a year behind on just about everything, which I definitely want to try to rectify. I don't know how I'm going to find any time this month, but you know, we have our year-end awards coming up that we're going to talk about in a little bit. And I don't have hardly anything that I'm going to nominate for Valiant because I haven't read anything this year, which is just sad to me because their stuff is high quality. But also high quality is the Aftershock stuff that I've been reading. And Replica is my favorite series from them. Unfortunately, I think the sales numbers weren't great. We had the first six issues come out, or first five issues, and then nothing. And we've got Paul Jenkins, you know, very busy guy. He's working on Alters now, which stars a person who's transitioning from male to female. So that's getting a lot of traction and attention. So I'm sure that's where his focus is now. But I really hope we see Replica return because it's my favorite Aftershock title. It's so much fun. The art is absolutely amazing, lighthearted, really, really good. So I definitely recommend that. You can go pick up the trade for, I think, like in stock trades, it's like $7. So really good deal. Also, Black Eyed Kids, which, you know, I've said I'm not a big fan of horror. And yet, Black Eyed Kids, for me, is probably the most consistent title that's coming out from Aftershock. Joe Pruitt, the publisher, is the one that writes it. The art is absolutely phenomenal. It's very compelling. It's very suspenseful. Really, really good. And being that I'm not a fan of horror and I'm, like, hooked on this book, pretty much says just how strong of a book it is. I'll also mention Jackpot real fast. Four issues of that have come out. Ray Fox. Again, I'm a sucker for a heist story. I've said it before. This is about a crew that is pulling off heists, and come to find out the leader of the crew has there's a lot more than meets the eye when it comes to her, and she's just beginning to discover that. So that's been really, really good. And also the final title I'll mention from Aftershock, as I mentioned earlier in the episode, going to be doing a spotlight on it, and that's Dreaming Eagles, Garth Ennis. I believe the artist name is Simon Colby, and again, about the Tuskegee Airmen, six issue miniseries, very, very well done, historically accurate for sure. Garth Ennis, nobody better when it comes to writing war comics, especially World War II comics, so that's been really good as well. You have any other titles you're going to mention, Manny?
Yeah, like you, when we did the spotlight on Replica, I started looking a little bit more into the Aftershock brand, and I immediately, obviously, was drawn to Jimmy and Amanda's Super Zero, which is about a girl who wants to have superpowers, and she goes through the motions that most of her favorite heroes went through. She goes to the extent that her first attempt is actually to try to have her parents killed. And she hires a homeless man to kill them. And what he ends up doing is telling them what she's up to. That doesn't work.
If I remember right, she doesn't actually hire... She hires them to be mugged. She doesn't actually want them killed.
Oh, okay.
That would be... No, yeah, you're right. That would make her a villain in a way.
Yeah, he just ends up approaching them and kind of telling them that they should be concerned and whatnot. And her parents are kind of weird though, because they just kind of brush it off, and they end up letting the homeless guy, which ends up being a veteran from the army, and ends up being a pretty good guy overall. And then she tries different methods. She tries magic. She tries getting bit by certain insects and things like that, and it's really really entertaining, and she feels that there's an impending doom coming soon that she's going to need to save everyone. She keeps having dreams and things like that, and the book is beautifully drawn. Unfortunately, the artist got snagged to Animosity. Gosh, do you remember what his name is, Chase?
Isn't it De La Torre?
Yes. Rafael De La Torre. And I asked Jimmy at Long Beach, when are we going to get more Super Zero? He says, when I get my artist back. I was like, you wouldn't do it with anyone else? He goes, nope, not going to do it with anyone else. So, covers obviously done a lot by Amanda Connor. So that one, pretty cool. But I have to say that my favorite Aftershock title has to be Rough Riders, written by Adam Glass and artwork by Patrick Olieff, and then colors by Gabe El-Tayeb. Adam Glass, as most people know, had a run on Suicide Squad. So now he kind of takes that type of genre over to U.S. history, where a younger Theodore Roosevelt is trying to solve a mystery about aliens and things like that. But he puts together a crew of legendary American Americans, like, for example, Harry Houdini, a stream magician and master of misdirection, Annie Oakley, gunslinger, entertainer, Jack Johnson, who's a brawler, son of a ex-slave, and then also, of course, Thomas Edison, who has a lot of tech and things like that. And they go down to Cuba to try and figure out what's going on. And it is a really, really well done book. I know that it's going to restart again in February with Rough Riders. They're going to call it Rough Riders, Riders on the Storm. So that comes out in February. Right now the trade is out. So if you want to catch up on that, I know that the trade comes out either this month or next month, but definitely worth the read. A lot of historical figures, because everything is run by obviously a group of very wealthy men from the history, and it has a nice little twist at the end as well. So I highly recommend Rough Riders. I'm kind of also not caught up on it, but Shipwreck by Warren Ellis. Warren Ellis has this weird way of writing. My favorite stuff he did was on Moon Knight, but Shipwrecked was so far, it's weird, but it's got me very intrigued. I've only read one issue, so I can't really talk too much about it. And then that's it when it comes to Aftershock. I did have one other title that I wanted to mention that I've been reading, if time permits.
Yeah, go ahead.
That would be Brian Buccoletto's Cannibal. That is under the Image brand. It's Brian Buccoletto, obviously, writing, and then the artwork by Jennifer Young. I'm sorry, the story is also, it's Brian Buccoletto and Jennifer Young, and then the artwork is by Matias Barraga. And this pretty much puts the story kind of like a, not necessarily a zombie book, but it's, I guess, in that line, because of unearthing ancient sediments due to hurricanes and natural disasters, and that there has been a virus that has been released in the air, and it one of the vaccines to cure it has had a terrible side effect that turns a person into a cannibal. And now the thing about these cannibals that make it different, why you can call them cannibals rather than zombies, is that these are conscious people that are still very much alive, and they have no choice but to feed on human flesh. And it's very interesting the way that some of these people go about choosing their victims and how they react, how they feel afterwards. So it really puts a soul behind a conscious zombie, I guess you can call it. But this takes place in a very, very small town in the Everglades that hasn't really had much issue with it because they're so far apart. And now, slowly and surely, some of these people are starting to invade their space. And it's about how they react. It's about how they're trying to keep the norm and not really get involved with what's going on in the rest of the world. But as we know, that's impossible. It is very well written. Artwork's good. And if there's one book you're going to pick up, I highly suggest you pick up Cannibal. Issue 3 comes out this week.
Yeah, Brian Buccioletto is definitely an underrated writer in the industry. I know he's currently got a job working on like a screenwriting kind of internship. So I don't know if we're going to see his output drop a little bit. He's done a lot of work over at DC. He's a very underrated writer, as I said. I have the first 2 issues of Cannibal. I haven't had a chance to read them, but it's definitely something that's on my radar. I was hoping to talk to Brian about it at some point, have him on the show, but he's been busy, I've been busy, so it hasn't happened yet. But yeah, if he's writing it, you can trust that it's going to be solid for sure. Yeah, so I guess that does it for recent reads. Let's talk a little bit about the Comic Source Awards, which are our end-of-year awards. I'm going to go down the list of categories. It's the same list that we had last year. And of course, if you want to listen to our episode from last year, you can certainly go and do that. So here are the categories. We have Best New Hero or Hero Team. So that's for a hero or a hero team that debuted in 2016. We also have Best New Villain or Villain Team. So again, same restrictions or rules apply. It's got to be a villain that debuted in 2016 or the villain team. So it could be existing villains that hadn't teamed up before and formed a new team in the year 2016. We also have Best New Ongoing Comic. So that's for a comic that had its release date in 2016. We also have best limited series, I should say. So for that one, it's got to be a limited series that had its final issue published in 2016. So if it's a 6-issue miniseries and 5 of the issues came out in 2015 and the final issue came out in 2016, we're going to count that as eligible. Likewise, if there's a miniseries going on right now, so we have a couple going on from DC, like Dead Man and the Dark Mansion of Forbidden Love, Death of Hawkman, those would not be eligible because they're not going to have their final issues out until next year, 2017. So they'd be eligible next year, but they're not eligible this year. We also have Best Cliffhanger or Moment. And that can be in a comic or a movie or a comic book TV show. We have Best Storyline. Again, that can be in a series, in a limited series, TV show, movie, whatever you think. And that could be a self-contained storyline within a particular issue or a particular title. Or it could be like a big crossover, whatever you want to do there. Also, Best Sleeper or Surprise Hit of 2016. Best Ongoing Comic. So as opposed to Best New Ongoing Comic, Best Ongoing Comic can be a title that has been around for a long time, or it can be a title that debuted in 2016, whatever you want. Just basically your favorite monthly comic that's coming out. We also have Best Graphic Novel. So again, that's an original graphic novel. It's not for a trade that collects other stories. Best or Favorite Cover from 2016. Best Artist. So that's on a monthly book or a limited series, whatever you want to do there. Best Cover Artist. So that's an artist who mostly does covers. Think Amanda Connor, Ryan Sook, Adam Hughes, Alex Ross, Mark Brooks, even though he did do Han Solo this year, interiors on that. But the artist that just mostly focuses on covers that you thought was your favorite for the year of 2016. We also have Best Writer. That's self-explanatory. We have Best Writer Artist. So that's for a creator that both wrote and drew a particular issue. Starting to become more rare. We certainly see it more on the creator-owned and independent side of things. We don't see it so much on the big two anymore. You know, used to have classic runs on stuff like John Byrne on Fantastic Four or Walter Simonson on Thor, but it just doesn't seem to be, definitely seems to be more rare these days, I'll say it that way. Also have Best Inker. This one's interesting. This may be the last year we do Best Inker. It's becoming harder and harder to really differentiate what exactly an inker does, because you have so many artists these days who work digitally, and they basically go straight from the pencils, the digital pencils, to doing color. And so inking is becoming kind of a lost art form. A lot of books don't have an inker listed at all anymore. But I think there are enough good inkers out there still that add to the overall look of the books that we're going to keep it on there for now. We'll evaluate it on a year-by-year basis. Best color artist is the next category. Best new talent. So again, that could be someone whose first work was in 2016 or someone that you feel their star is on the rise and they're starting to get a lot of recognition. I know Tom King is somebody who has been picked several times in the past, and really with his work on Omega Men and Sheriff of Babylon, and especially critically acclaimed Vision, and now on Batman, wouldn't surprise me to see his name picked as best new talent for the third year in a row, because the guy's talent just keeps increasing exponentially, it seems, in a way. But maybe I'll pick somebody else this year. I don't know. We'll see. Next category is most underrated book. So that's a book that you just think a lot of more people should be reading. Your biggest disappointment in 2016. So that could be a comic. It could be a storyline. It could be an artist leaving a book, or a writer leaving a book, or a movie, a TV show, Netflix show, whatever you want. Your biggest thing that let you down the most in 2016. Also, what you felt was the biggest comic story in 2016. So again, that could be comic related as far as movie wise. It could be casting, could be something that happened to a character, could be something with a creator, whatever you want. Just something related to the comic industry 2016 that stood out in your mind. And the final category, most anticipated moment of 2017. Again, totally wide open. What you're looking forward to the most. Is it a new series that's coming out? Is it the Wonder Woman movie? Is it some new project that a creator has announced that you're expecting to see debut? Whatever you want it to be. So those are our categories. I haven't thought too much about it yet. Normally we record the episode in early January. So feel free to send us an email with your nominations, and we'll certainly read them on the podcast if you choose to do that. Or if there's someone you think that we should consider specifically, again, reach out to us, let us know. We're happy to hear from you. It's always fun this time of year. Well, really, after Christmas is when it really shifts into high gear, all the end of year top lists and everything. So did you have any? I know, Manny, that you started working on your list already. Is there any categories or anything you want to mention that you try to persuade some folks to put in some nominations, some votes for us to consider?
Let me see. Well, you know, got added to my list a lot today was a couple of Green Arrows here and there. But I do have, for new hero, I'm not sure if you still want to call him a hero or not, Raptor from Nightwing. Good. Then for best sleeper surprise, I have Top Cow's Eclipse.
That's a good and
with,
pick.
And with that best new talent, I have Zach Kaplan on here.
Yeah, good picks for sure.
As far as cliffhangers, there's no bigger cliffhanger than the fact that Dr. Manhattan screwed up 10 years of the DC universe.
Well, we don't know for sure if it's Dr. Manhattan yet.
Presumably. That somebody screwed up 10 years of it. Presumably Dr. Manhattan. And then also with that, I have the three Jokers.
Mm.
Best storyline, Postal. That's one of them there. And then last, I'll say biggest disappointment, Marvel. Comics in general.
Wow. All right, fair enough. Well, there you go. What's your list? Let us know. Reach out to us. Like I said, either send us an email or you can put it down in the comments on the episode. We'd love to hear from you. And I'm not sure how we're going to do the episode this year. I'd love to get some other podcasters that I know personally to join us and have more than just Jaden and Manny and I. In fact, I don't even know if Jaden is going to join us this year. His reading has dropped off a cliff dramatically. That's why he hasn't been on the show much. Full-time job that he's got now, more than full-time job, and still going to school. So he's got that struggle going on that a lot of us had in our early 20s. And then, of course, trying to find time to spend with friends. And so I don't know if he's going to join us this year or not. So I guess we'll see. All right, next thing I want to mention is Con Man Season 2 debuts, I believe, on the 8th on Comic-Con HQ, which is the San Diego Comic-Con or Comic-Con International video on demand channel. And they recently, 4 days ago, debuted a new trailer. There's a link in the show notes. You can go and check it out on YouTube. I'm highly anticipating watching this. There's not a lot of things that I watch like as soon as they come out. I binge watch or whatever, but Con Man Season 2 will definitely be one of the things that I can't wait to see, and I'll be watching it as soon as possible. So, like I said, if you haven't seen the trailer, go and check it out. There's a link in the show notes where you can go, or just go to YouTube and you can Google Con Man Season 2. Sorry, I just started the trailer. So yeah, premieres December 8th on Comic-Con HQ. What did you think of the trailer, Manny?
Lots of cameos. So that's actually what I look forward to the most in this upcoming season. Of course, just all the shenanigans that go throughout with all the main characters that we all love from the first season. Fantastic. So really looking forward to it. We know it's going to be hilarious. Now it's a matter of how good the cameos are going to be. But yeah. given the trailer, there's a lot.
Yeah, Eliza Dushku, Lou Ferrigno, Stan Lee. I couldn't tell who the plant guy was. Because it even says so many cameos. Stan Lee's in the trailer. I'm not sure who that plant guy is. Maybe it kind of looks like Jeff Daniels a little bit. So, yeah. Really, really excited. Comes out, like I said, on the 8th, which is what? Is that Friday?
4 days from now. So, yeah, I think so. Thursday or Friday.
Yep, that'll be my weekend for sure. No, I think actually that's Thursday. Let me look at the calendar real quick. Yep, Thursday. Thursday, December 8th, Con Man Season 2. Make sure you have your subscription to Comic-Con HQ so you can go and check it out. And speaking of Con Man, another bit of news that had me very excited and really happy, and that's the Con Man mobile game has been nominated for the Mobile Excellence Awards for 2016. So the Mobile Excellence Awards are kind of the Academy Awards of the mobile industry. So it covers not just mobile games, but delivery platforms, marketing for mobile content, mobile payment systems, kids content, live streaming. You know, so much of what we do now is on our phone and on our tablet. Everyone's so busy all the time and always on the go. So this is a way to kind of recognize all the hard work in that industry of mobile entertainment development. And the maker of the game, the Con Man game, which is Monkey Strength Productions, has been nominated for Con Man the game. So I don't know what the numbers are like for Con Man the game. It's such an incredible game. It's so much fun. I know whatever the numbers are, they're not as high as they should be or they could be, because it's such an incredible game that it really needs to be out there more and more people need to be playing it so the game can continue to grow and support itself and they can keep adding content. So when I saw that, I'm not sure when the nomination was announced, but I saw it on Friday and I thought that that was really, really great that they got nominated for that. So if you're not familiar with Con Man the game, You can go and listen to some past episodes of the podcast where we talk about it. I can give you those episodes right now in just a second. But also go and just download the game. Just go and download it and try it out. You don't need to know anything about Con Man, the series. You don't need to know anything about mobile games. And you don't even necessarily have to play it. I mean, it's almost sacrilege for me to say that, but you don't. I mean, if you just want to go and download it, any download you give of the game helps raise the profile of the game, because the most downloaded games when you go to the App Store are the ones that you see featured. So just go and download. Even if you don't like it, even if you don't play, just go and download it. It's really, really, really cool. So you can go and
How are you to not going to like it? That game's fantastic.
Yeah, it's so fun. But, I mean, maybe it's not for everybody. But if you could go and listen to episodes 151 and 161, and you can learn more about the Con Man game. So I think that's going to do it for our comic catch-up episode. Do you have anything else you want to talk about, Manny?
No, I think we're good. Oh, real quick, the four-part Arrowverse, Supergirl,
Alien Invasion,
Legends of Tomorrow was done very, very well, and each episode really, really hit the strength of each individual brand. So it was done really well, and that Arrow episode was very, very touching, to say the least. We had a lot of characters come back for a short, brief time, including Laurel Lance. And really, really well done, especially being that was the 100th episode of Arrow. I thought they did a really good job. And then they had some really cool moments, like they it looks like the Hall of Justice where they're at. And then, I mean, just a ton of characters. It's a shame that contracts and things like that don't allow this to happen as often, but really had a high comic book feel to it, and you know, they didn't do too much to it. So
what was the order? I know Supergirl was first. Was Arrow last?
No, Legends of Tomorrow was last. So Supergirl, to be honest, didn't really have much of an episode about it. It kind of stood on its own as its mid-season finale, and they didn't really mess with it too much. What they did is at the end, Barry Allen shows up and takes her to their time, or to their Earth, not time. They're on the same timeline. It's just different Earth. And then from there, Flash is the beginning. They show up and they actually end up fighting each other, because they mind control quite a few of the heroes, and Barry and Flash have to deal with everybody and how to stop them. But interestingly enough, these four episodes, actually, when they cross over, everybody finds out that Barry Allen has screwed up the timeline in order to spend time with his family. And you have people like Ramon, Cisco, and especially Sarah Lance, who are very upset, because I mean, they understand the implications of time travel and what it can do. And in Cisco's case, messing with the timeline actually ended up resulting in his brother's death. For Diggle, ended up him having a son instead of a daughter. And Sarah, of course, has been finding herself throughout all these episodes not to alter the timeline to have her sister come back. And come to find out that they completely screwed the timeline, that Barry completely did it for the same reason. So very, very interesting subplots too. And if you have it on demand or on any of those on the CW's channel, I suggest you go ahead and take a look at it.
So Barry flashpointed it up, huh?
He did. And the weird thing is that it only lasted one episode. He was back in his quote-unquote original time by the end of that same episode. But he really screwed up with people's lives. And we had been waiting for a while to see what kind of implications it was going to have. And so far, I mean, things have been coming up left and right. And this one was probably the worst because it really split up the team because they wanted nothing to do with him just due to the fact of how selfish they felt he was. Also, Firestorm got a message from Barry in the future saying, don't trust me. Not even then, because of the things that he could do. And now they're trying to figure out why, you know, what that means.
So, I mean, does it seem like they're going to try to put the genie back in the bottle and fix, I mean, give Diggle back the right person? And
well, they can't. That's impossible. That they've actually gone through that, the motion of talking that the more you try to fix it, the more you're actually going to break it. So now at this point, you got to leave it alone and deal and just live with the decisions you've made and with the consequences of the actions that you've taken.
Now, so does Diggle remember that he used to have, I mean, that's like mourning for a lost child.
No, nobody remembers anything about their lives were before.
Wow.
It's not until Barry Allen, for whatever reason, tells them that. And also, not only that, but one of the villains, Alchemy, somehow was able to go through, was able to remember both timelines, and he's been part of the reason why Barry Allen's had to tell people what's going on, because he's bringing people, villains from that altered timeline back over to this one and remembering their altered lives. So it's been pretty interesting.
Wow, sounds like it. Yeah, when you get time travel in there, it's always tricky because it's like, well, you could do anything, really, time travel, you know. I mean, look at Heroes as an example. The first season was so amazing, and then the second season when they started messing around with time travel, that show went into the crapper so fast.
It was ridiculous. Yeah, it's definitely tough.
Third season, so yeah, it's always dangerous when you start messing with time. Well, once again, we'd like to thank everyone for joining us. Please visit us at thecomicsourceblog.com for past episodes of the podcast. You can watch episodes of our YouTube channel there as well, and you can find links to Manny's written blog and my written blog, and of course, our famous sketch gallery. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Also do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to keep up to date on new episodes and convention coverage. Don't forget about our partnership with LRM Online. You can go to lrmonline.com to enjoy our new podcast, 9-Panel Grid. New episodes come out every Tuesday and will cover a variety of topics. So thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.